listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
And welcome to episode number 93 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and the Bolt. How you guys doing?
Hey, I'm good. I am sitting in the world's squeakiest chair, so.
Yeah, we're in a new podcasting suite, as we could call it.
We're not torturing mice, it's my chair.
Yeah. We're actually in a much bigger room now. They like to switch us around every couple months here, and now we have lots of windows, so maybe for the next month we could have a whole Good Morning America thing, whereas podcast, people could be standing outside. There's just tons of windows in this room.
Not that our audience would know that, because it's a podcast, not a video.
Well, maybe if they start showing up, we'll
I just envisioned like a bunch of like Children of the Corn kids out there just sort of eerily watching.
Yes, it might be a distraction. But anyway, so things been going well?
Yeah, I had a great show last night. Played with some really good bands, and we played really well. Everyone liked it. Somebody came up to me after the show and was like, "I thought I really liked your band. Your voice reminded me of Jeff Tweedy." And I drew a blank on Jeff Tweedy, and I was like, "Oh, really? That sounds familiar. I don't know if I know that guy." And he was like the guy from Wilco. And I was like, "Oh, yeah." I don't know if it's cool to not know who the singer from Wilco is or
some people just aren't good with names.
Well, now that Wilco's kind of like a soccer mom band, it probably is cool to not know.
To not know.
That's
who
right.
They are.
Yeah. That's right.
I've got my last residency show of the month tonight. I'm excited.
Cool.
We're doing a bunch of cover songs, which we normally don't do, but we're breaking out like 6 covers, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any of them notable?
Dirty Work and Reelin' in the Years by Steely Dan. Thick as a Brick, Jethro Tull. 1985, Paul McCartney. 1941 by Nilsson.
Nilsson?
Nilsson. Harry Nilsson. Oh, yeah, Nilsson.
Nilsson.
Matthew and Gunnar Nilsson.
You did a Nilsson cover. I might have to come out to the show. There's a small chance that we might be opening for Wang Chung in a couple of weeks.
Wow. Wang Chung.
Everybody Wang Chung tonight.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Apparently they're playing in... The band that was going to open fell through. So,
do they play any other songs besides Wang Chung?
They just play that one song.
Do,
like
I thought if we did,
song.
If we did open for them, it'd be hilarious if we played that song.
Oh,
totally pissed them off. I've always wanted to do that, like open for a band and play their hit song before they're set.
There's a rumor that someone did that to Three Dog Night once, since most of their songs were covers anyways, that the opening band just did their whole set.
Whoa.
But, that could be urban legend. I don't know.
That's an urban legend I'd like to believe.
Yes.
Well, we're going to try and keep it not shorter, but to the specific length we always try to shoot for, just because we've got some places to be. But we still got lots of great content, lots of news, lots of feedback. Kind of goes in spurts. Everyone calls in the same week. It's like it's a CD Baby podcast flash mob. Call all at once.
Now that Lost is over, they have time to call in.
That's right. But before we get into that, I was just going to say that you may have noticed that we've been a little inconsistent with the releasing of the podcast, and I get friendly reminders from some of you like, "Hey, where's my darn podcast?" And it's not entirely our fault. We've had guests cancel on us, for the excuse of having a baby and and things like that. And so I just want to see, if you, the listeners, would like for us to do at least a roundtable edition in the weeks that we don't have a guest. I've got a huge list of people that I just emailed, and hopefully they'll be getting back to me soon. A lot of cool people that I'm trying to get on the show, but I just wasn't sure if you'd prefer that we just keep doing the roundtables, because I know we could make up the podcast this in itself, but get feedback on that, just because we've kind of skipped some weeks since we didn't have a guest on to talk about or doing this instead of the guest. So you can get back to us on that. You can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com or call our listener line at 206-426-5683 and give us your feedback on that, because we will do whatever you say. Whatever you say. But it is, summer is coming up, so we do tend to lighten the load a little bit in summer because people are traveling. Both us and listenership seems to decline some because people are out touring, hopefully. So we try to take some breaks in there for summer. But just let us know what you think on that.
Also, if you want to suggest that Kevin wear a tutu during one of our next podcasts, he will do whatever you say.
Whatever you say.
And we will take a photo and put it on the podcast site.
There you go. I could get a tutu from my daughter. It probably wouldn't fit very well, but that makes it even more funny. Well, why don't we get into some news?
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 Music. News.
Well, if you've logged into your CD Baby account recently, you may have noticed that CD Baby launched a single song distribution program. For a one-time fee of $9, you can upload and sell your digital single through CD Baby, and we'll also deliver it to iTunes, Amazon MP3, and all the other CD Baby digital partners. There's no annual fee and no per-store charges. The standard CD Baby 9% of digital distribution sales does apply. A new study out from Sophos, an IT security firm, suggests that 60% of Facebook users are considering quitting. However, it's questionable how the data from this study was collected. The poll was taken from 1,500 Facebook users, but it wasn't a scientific study. So people are wondering, if it wasn't scientific, why did PC World decide to publish the story? Well, saying that 60% of users are quitting Facebook is sure to generate a ton of buzz. While the volume of users searching for delete Facebook account on Google has surged in recent weeks due to the privacy backlash, the volume of users deleting their accounts is well below 60% of the Facebook user base. Speaking of Facebook and their privacy issues, it's been reported that today, the day we're recording this podcast, so by the time you're hearing this, I'm sure there'll be lots of people talking about it, Facebook will announce a simplified version of their privacy rules. Facebook has received growing criticism for their privacy rules and how they seem to keep changing, making personal information more public. We'll see how these new rules play out. John Mayer had an interesting quote recently. He said, "I just think Twitter as a form of communication, I think it's over, to be honest with you." John Mayer said that during an onstage interview in Hollywood recently. To understand the significance of his statement, we need a little history, and here it is. A year ago, there were reports that Mayer and his girlfriend, actress Jennifer Aniston, broke up because he was more interested in tweeting than hanging out with her. This past December, Mayer decided that he needed to break from Twitter and other social media services, and his one-week digital cleanse. But he came back and since then has gained some 500,000 new followers, pushing him past the 3.2 million mark, making him one of the most followed people in the service. He's only 500,000 behind President Obama. After his statement, John quickly followed up in his post entitled, "Twitter isn't over, I'm over it." Mayer talks about how the overabundance of tiny amounts, 140 characters of information on Twitter, is a limitation of the service. He goes on to say, "Finding out in 140 characters what a stranger has to say about you is like a mathematical equation without an established value of X. Who are you, stranger?" That was what he said. Huh. So John goes on to rave about how he prefers using Tumblr blog instead of Twitter. And those are the headlines. So I'm curious. I thought that article about John Mayer was interesting because he's a very prominent musician using Twitter. It seems like Twitter, we definitely aren't hearing as much about it. People talking about it. A lot of people not tweeting as much. So yeah. Is it over?
I don't think it's over yet. I think that it's, I mean, I really think it was kind of a new kind of communication that was basically invented. So it's not just a service, but also like a form of communication. I suppose it's possible that if the communication develops without Twitter sort of progressing along with it, then Twitter may become less popular and that people may
start using something else, but that's still being used to a huge extent, and you hear about it all the time, and it's become a huge part of journalism, you know, not just music. I think that it's the initial buzz has worn off, but it's still being used very actively by a lot of people.
For me, it seems like there's a certain threshold at which it becomes less valuable. Like, if you're using it to maintain communication or relationships with like a small group of people, I don't know what that would be, 20, 30, 40, something like that, where you can actually look at it and see the feed and see the patterns of what people are contributing to the feed, that seems valuable to me. And if you're like John Mayer and you have 3 million people following you and you have no intention of actually having a relationship, a two-way relationship with these people, you're just putting out information and they love it because they're already your fan, that works. Then there's that huge gray area in the middle where, like, I feel like I've gotten with my account is I have too many friends now, and, or I'm following too many people that every time I look at it, I'm just like, what the hell am I seeing? Right. Well, who are these people? Mm-hmm. And why are they going to listen to what I say? And then you feel like giving up because it's not the communication anymore. Yeah.
The thing that's the change that they made a while back that we talked about on the podcast, that where before, whenever someone, you followed somebody, you used to see everything they said, but now you only see things that direct, just blanket statements that they make, and you only see at replies by people that you're also following as well. I wish you could adjust that for certain users, because that's where it seemed to be less useful for me, because I stopped seeing, discovering other people that I might be interested in following. It made it a little harder to do that. Like, I just had to randomly think of people's names. And then a lot of the people that I was following right out of the bat were like diehard Twitter people, and almost all of them, if not about 75% of them, don't tweet hardly ever at all anymore. Yeah. And so it's like, well, all those people that were gung-ho about it aren't into it anymore. Now I got to go find other people that are into it in order to make it valuable. I still use it, and it connects to my Facebook account, so I always update from there. But yeah, it's interesting because it seemed to, everything was Twitter. Like, even, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, it kept coming up over and over again. And on the evening news, it was all about Twitter, and they had their Twitter feed, and now it seemed like a lot of that's gone away just because it's very labor-intensive to maintain. And it, like you're saying, Chris, it morphs for different usages for different people, and sometimes the amount of people following you takes you through a threshold where it being a useful tool kind of gets changed into something else, and it's not really useful anymore because of the mass of what's there. I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think Twitter's going away. I mean, but it's definitely seemed to have lost a lot of its
I still think buzz. it's a really important marketing tool, because I just don't feel like Facebook has really figured out exactly what they want to do with people who are trying to use their services for marketing. I mean, their pages and how you can promote those things and how those things show up in people's feeds and all that sort of stuff is still changing. And I think that with Twitter, everything is public. You have access to, not only do you have access to everyone on Twitter, but people can do searches, and your tweets can show up in Google searches and stuff like that. So it's a very public way of sort of marketing yourself.
Well, you mentioned Facebook and their plan. Apparently, according to some, their plan is to sell your information.
Right.
Which, you know, there's been lots of pretty hot debates about the latest privacy changes. And it's funny. It was one of the last roundtable editions that we did. I mentioned that Facebook was, with some of their recent changes, opening the door for a competitor. Sure enough, like the week after we said that, all these like major technology blogs and just blogs in general were saying the same thing, that they've opened the door for a competitor. I don't think they're going to be dethroned anytime soon, but there's enough people angry about the privacy setting issue and not only that, but the fact that they keep changing things without telling you.
Yeah.
And that gets frustrating from a marketing standpoint, because I'm very involved with the CD Baby's Facebook efforts here, and also, you know, what I do with my band. And it's like, not only does the layout change, but the functionalities change, and they don't tell you. And you start to do things that rely on that functionality, and then they just randomly change it.
Well, that weird change where you can't have a static front page unless you have a certain amount of fans.
Yeah, and I need to see if that affected CD Babies, because you had to authorize it, but
yeah,
you were supposed to have a certain number of fans. It should be fine for CD Baby because we have 20 some thousand fans, but yeah. Or the other thing was they implied in that you had to be running Facebook ads.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, so the people thought it was kind of a ploy to get people to buy Facebook ads.
Hey,
so they've done they've made a lot of bonehead moves
crafty
lately that it seems like all happened at once, and everybody like, we've got a glimpse behind the curtain. We know what their motivations are, and I'm jumping ship, you know?
I'd be curious to hear some takes from our audience on how they use their Facebook pages and what sort of success they've had. And I'm, you know, to clarify for people who don't aren't as familiar with how it works, is that having a Facebook page is different than having a Facebook account. And it's something you sort of create as an admin Facebook user. You create a Facebook page.
Yeah, and those are hard enough to figure out how to create, how to edit and navigate, because it's not simple and there's no real instructions anywhere. And so
how many of you out there have actually tried to post from your band page and actually ended up posting on your personal profile?
Yeah. We'll see. That's going to be continuing to be a story, and we'll see if they don't kind of rein it in a little bit. I think it could be trouble for them, because we'll see though. All right, and the singles program at CD Baby, yeah, we've been excited about that. It's been something we've been planning for a long time, and so if you've got, you know, songs sitting around or your album is going to come out, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, but you already have one song mixed, get a single up. Test
it out. So it's, what, it's $9.99?
$9. Not even the 99.
Oh, just
$9.
$9 flat. And that, does that include a barcode?
Yes, it does.
For an undisclosed limited time. That sounds very vague.
Yeah, it is very vague.
But for a long, long, long time, I think you will be able to get a barcode for free, included that in the $9.
Is a really great deal.
Yeah, and somebody, we posted on the DIY Musician blog, located at diymusician.cdbaby.com, an article about it, I think, that Chris wrote about, you know, the incremental album, like how to build a fan base. And it was funny because somebody responded saying it was just a scam to get people to spend $9 on each song, and then when the album was done, to pay $35 to sell the whole album together. And I was like,
I wrote was a scam?
That we were just trying to scam them together.
Come on.
I'm like, well, if you have no fans, then no, don't release nine singles for $9 and then the album for $35. The idea is if you have a fan base that's eagerly awaiting, give them some nuggets, they'll buy them, and then that'll get some income going and also get them excited. And then when the album's out, they're going to buy the album. But if you have no fans,
similar to
Cell
Dweller did, he didn't do it with singles, but he did incremental EPs.
Yeah, he's still in the process of that, from my understanding.
And then once it's done, he's going to sort of take the best of that and make an album with it.
Yeah,
right?
He was doing like 4 EPs and he was going to, it was just all of them were going to make an album and then he'd release that physically. So the EPs were going to be digital only. Then when the whole thing was done, release it as a physical product. And we had on a couple episodes back, Martin Kennedy, I think, did something similar. He was giving it away, though, from All India Radio, but releasing singles, a song a week leading up to Christmas, or it might have been a day, I can't remember. But so there's lots of cool things you can do with it.
It's just awesome to me. Like, for $9, I mean, I know I sound like I'm, obviously I work for the company.
A company man.
Yeah.
you work for Host Baby.
But yeah, I know. But $9 to get your album on, or to get a song on iTunes, you know, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Well, the cool thing is I talk to so many artists that, you know, they may have a band or an official project, but, you know, usually artists always have some little side thing they're doodling in that's different. And they may never release an album, but they've got like a track that they kind of think is cool. You know, put it up there, you know.
Yeah.
You should get everything out there. You know, the more content you have out there, the better your chances of finding a fan base. So, all right. Do it now. Well, we don't have a interview to recap. Since our time's a bit more limited today, We do have some great phone calls, lots of great calls. So we're going to get into those right now.
Right now.
CD Baby Podcast.
Message line.
206-426-5683.
The number you have dialed.
206-426-5683.
Hey, Kevin, Chris, and the Bolt. I love your podcast. You've created some great shows, and I've kept them all on my iPod, and I was just going back and listening recently to some of your prior podcasts, and I was listening to the one with Tom Jackson, who advises people on live performances and how to create moments in their live performances that are memorable, that fans can take home with them and that solidify the relationship between the fan and the artist. And I got a laugh because he talked about his major client, Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift cannot sing. Go check out any clip of a live performance of hers, like from the Grammy Awards or any of these other live shows that she did. She cannot sing. I don't get it. What is she doing there that creates a memorable performance? She might have moves. There might be solos on stage. There might be great stories she tells. But if she cannot sing, where is she? I mean, it just blows my mind the level of popularity she has. And please explain. Please enlighten us about her popularity. Anyway, just a random comment, neither here nor there, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. Love the podcast, and Tom Jackson had a lot of great things to say. I don't want to take anything away from him. He had some great advice. I just found it ironic that his major client is Taylor Swift. Take care. Bye.
Well, thank you for that call. I should say that we have a couple single calls by themselves, and then we got a group of calls at the end, but he didn't leave his name, so I don't know what his name was, but...
I have a theory.
Wait, go ahead. You look very excited about your theory.
Yeah, she can't sing, but she is a perfect example of marketing. So you don't need to be able to sing to have an album, because auto-tune takes care of that and amazing producers. So she makes this recorded product that is perfectly marketable to young teen girls, maybe even preteen girls, that eat it up. They love it. She's like the every girl. She wrote these songs in her room. She understands our pain and our hopes and all this stuff. So it's perfect for them. Then they're so attached to the marketed image of her that when they see her live, it doesn't matter if she's in tune or not, because they are also so young that they haven't developed their ears enough to be that discerning. And they kind of don't care, because it's
they can run auto-tune through a PA system.
Right, they can. But even at the Grammys, I think she was singing sharp the whole time, or flat, or something. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, I saw something where...
But it doesn't matter, because the kids are more concerned with the cult and the hero worship of it and the connection they feel with her than how she's performing.
Well, in a way, she's making those moments of connection to her audience before she plays live, and then they're going to the concert to relive that experience,
right,
which is the opposite of sort of what he talks about, of making the moment on the stage and then having them go back and buy the CD.
Yeah, it's pop music. If you haven't figured out by now, that's what pop music is.
Yeah, they can't sing. But her record label did apologize for her performance at the Grammys.
Really?
I think
that's funny.
I think they issued like an official, oh yeah, that was bad, sorry.
Sorry. Wow. About that performance.
poor Stevie Nicks was up there sort of like singing with her. She's like, why are you ruining my song?
Oh.
What can you do? Yeah, but, you know, at first I thought he was going to be mad at Tom Jackson for, why would he work with that? Well, first of all, I'm sure it was a very nice payday, but
right,
also those are the kind of artists that, you know, their performances are, you know, scripted out to a T, and he's going to help with that. It's not really his call whether or not they can sing or not.
Right, right. And I think, actually, I just remembered the first time she was on Saturday Night Live, she did this thing at the end of her first song where she kind of giggled and seemed like uncontrollably excited, like a, you know, just sort of teen invigorated, oh my gosh, I'm so excited I'm on Saturday Night Live. I thought, that is probably so scripted. That moment that seems so free and spontaneous.
Uh-huh.
I think they planned it,
because sure
everyone was like, oh, so cute.
I mean, that's the other thing, you know, you're talking about, like... You're talking about, you know, a teenager who doesn't have years and years of experience to stand on. They don't get up there and have, you know, most of them are not going to have the the ability to react to the situation. There's all these elements going on live that mentally can be challenging, much less singing and performing, that I'm sure all that stuff was probably just, I can give Tom a call and ask him.
Even CD Baby's friend Lee DeWise was singing out of tune on American Idol last night.
Don't get me started.
He's one of the two finalists. And he was out of tune.
The most wretched rendition of Beautiful Day. Let's move on before. It's a good thing we didn't record that portion of my rant. Okay. Right. We got some more calls. Let's get to it.
Hey there. This is Gregory Hyde. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. And you can find me on gregoryhyde.com. I just put out a new album that's also available on CD Baby called Hello God, This is Gregory Hyde. Really loving the podcast. Been listening for a little while now, and there's just an immense amount of great information that you guys are supplying. So thanks for making this for all of us. Concerning the ever-popular topic of free music, I know that one keeps getting brought back up. I've had some experiences that I thought I'd share. When I put out an EP several years ago, my main goal was just to get it in the hands of as many people as possible. So I went on a couple of band website forum boards that I was a member of at the time and told the guys who I met on there, if they wanted a copy, I'd send it to them for free. And so I sent out quite a few of them, just hoping to garner some interest in long-term projects that I would be doing down the road. And it actually worked out really well. Every single one of those guys that I sent the first free EP to have wound up buying my new album. And on another element of that, I set up my website now where you get a free MP3 if you sign up for my email newsletter. And I went back to one of those boards that I visit from time to time and, you know, kind of mentioned, hey, I've got my new album out, and some guys were starting to buy it. And one guy commented that it just wasn't heavy enough for him. He wanted something that was more of a real rock album. And before I even had a chance to respond, one of the other guys on the board said, well, hey, go to his website, sign up for his email newsletter, and you get this free bonus MP3 that I think is the heaviest song he's ever done. And I use a mailing list software, so I was able to go check, and sure enough, that guy did go and sign up for my email newsletter and get the free MP3. And it was one of my fans that was able to share that with him and made that happen. So, you know, it's definitely a good tool to use. One of the things that turned me on to that a long time ago was Seth Godin's book, Free Prize Inside. And understanding that there's more to it than just giving something away free. There's sometimes people are buying things for different reasons than the product itself. But anyway, thanks again. Really enjoying the podcast. We're looking forward to checking out the Music Discovery podcasts as well. And again, my name is Gregory Hyde. That's gregoryhyde.com, and it's Hyde with a Y. And looking forward to hearing future episodes. Take care.
Well, thank you for that call. Was his name Gregory or Gregory?
I think Gregory.
Gregory, okay. He said it last time. I'm like, okay. Thanks for that call, Gregory.
That's good advice.
Yeah, that was a cool story. I thought it was interesting how that, you know, his fans were starting to do some of the work for him. And it actually worked. And
yeah.
So, and got somebody who, you know, was somewhat interested just because he's a part of a community, and then another member of the community said, hey, well, if this is what you're looking for, you might like this, and it's free. And now he's on his email list, and I bet you eventually he buys an album.
Yeah.
All right, we've got one last grouping of calls. Here we go.
Hey, Kevin. This is Frances Drost, and I'm calling just to tell you how much I really love the podcast. I've listened to all your episodes from the beginning, and especially episode number 91, I wanted to just let you know that you solved so many problems for me. I just completed a whole album called Hand Painted, and it's an album of cover tunes. It's an instrumental, and I was going through tons of headaches trying to figure out all the licensing. In fact, I didn't even put it on iTunes because of all the hassles, because I couldn't figure it out. I do have it with CD Baby, but I just want you to know that now I'm going to go to Scott's website and go go through all the licensing I need to do and get that thing on Pandora and iTunes and so forth. So I love the podcast. Thank you so much for all you're doing, and please know that I'm listening to everything you say and trying to put in practice everything I hear. Again, this was Francis, and my website is francesdrost.com, FRANCESDROST. Thanks. Goodbye.
Hey, guys. Great podcast with Scott Selwood of Limelight and Rights Flow. It came up in the interview, but I think you should even reemphasize again how much better a deal the Limelight is than Harry Fox Agency. Harry Fox Agency, you have to renew the license every year. What a ripoff that is. Kevin, you sort of implied that, but hey, tell it like it is. That's a total ripoff. And the license with Limelight goes on in perpetuity, and if you want to increase the number of downloads, you pay for them then and pay that small administrative fee of $15. Seems like a great program and very reasonable, and I'm excited about it, and I'm glad that you've established a relationship with them, and I'm glad that those of us who are hoping to release stuff in the near future are out of the grips of dealing with the Harry Fox agencies of the world. So anyway, thanks for your great podcast. Talk to you later. You have transformed lives, by the way.
Hi, this is Brian Arbuckle from Sunshine Collective in Los Angeles. One thing you guys overlooked on your covers podcast was the demand for covers by original writers and publishers. Many times when a film, television show, or commercial is looking to license a song, they're priced out of the game because of the master owner, i.e. the record labels, wanting a much larger fee than the original writers or publishers would be willing to accept. The reason for this, most of the time, record labels will only see the initial licensing fee with the exception of the occasional breakout hit, while the writers and publishers will almost always see additional revenue in the form of performance royalties long after the initial fee has been paid. If you have a good cover, you become a great master owner, and it can be incredibly valuable to the publisher, which is why you should get in contact with the original publisher and share your version of the song with them. They actually might lead you to more licensings, at least as a master owner. Keep up the great work, guys. Love your show.
Thank you for those calls, and I thought that last one was a great tip. That, yeah, if you're doing a cover song and it's a really good recording, send it to the publisher. Make sure you fully license it properly first.
Right.
But there are many times where the film or TV wants to use a particular song, and they're never, ever going to be able to afford the master recording usage fee. Not that, and the publisher fee as well. So, that's a good way to get some placements. That's how I think I mentioned in one of our recent episodes that I got a placement for one of our artists in the Marley and Me film, and it's an artist called Prozac for Lovers, and he does like loungy, kind of laid-back versions of, you know, very popular songs. And this was a Nirvana song that they used, and you know, obviously Nirvana would never ever let them use this song, and it sounded completely different from the original Nirvana recording anyway, or I should say the Nirvana estate, whoever owns the master recording at this point. It's probably still a label, but they were able to work a deal with the publishing, but you know, the artist didn't get a ton of money, but they got a decent amount, and for an indie artist, and their song got played in a movie, so that is a good tip. Yeah, there's some other good calls about, you know, the Harry Fox Agency. Yes, they do make you renew yearly.
And what that means is if you've bought, let's say, a license to sell 100 downloads of some publisher's song, you get the mechanical license to sell those 100. And if you don't sell through all of them, let's say it's December 30th and you've only sold 10 of them, come January 1st, you have to buy a new 100.
Right.
Licenses.
Right. So yeah. You're basically paying for nothing.
Yeah. You're paying for stuff you haven't sold.
Yeah. Yeah. So Rights Flow is definitely indie friendly. So check them out. Like I said, there's a link inside your CD Baby account over to their page. There should be a landing page up on CD Baby in the members area where just more information about them. And you can go to rightsflow.com. And the Limelight service is the one that's geared towards independent artists. And apparently we're transforming lives, guys.
Yeah, I like it.
I never thought the mechanical royalties episode would have such a big impact.
Yeah, Frances says she's going to do whatever we tell her to do.
Yeah.
We've already said we'll do whatever they tell us to do.
Everybody's going to be wearing tutus by the end of the day.
Everyone, all you listeners should be covering Chris Robley and the Fear of Heights tunes and paying me mechanical royalties.
I think the podcast was breaking up just then. We thank you for those calls. And if you would like to call in with your comments, thoughts, or feedback, call us at 206-426-5683. I did have some emails, but I don't think I'm going to have time to get to them today. We will respond to them personally, though. You can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And you can also leave comments in the comment section at the podcast blog at cdbabypodcast.com. And I know what I was wanting to say. Frances, I believe it was in her call, she mentioned Pandora. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm interested in hearing back from all of the artists out there is how long, if you were even able to get on Pandora. I signed up our EP, I think it's going on like 3 months ago, like their music submission process, and it hasn't budged. Like they tell you a status of like, they review it and tell you if it's been rejected or accepted. I'm still waiting to be reviewed.
Well, you interviewed
Tim Westergren?
Tim Westergren,
yeah,
I think
that's the last thing I want to, hey Tim, remember me? Why the heck is it taking so long? Can you do something about that? I'm sure he gets plenty of that. And I'm sure he won't respond to me ever again. Yeah, speaking of Tim, he was on the cover of Time Magazine, the extra extended fold-out part of being the one.
He was a centerfold?
They had a special cover of the 100 Most Influential People. You opened it up and it folded out a few more.
One of them.
And he was one of them.
Wow.
So I was 1 degree away from being on the cover of Time Magazine.
Holy macaroni.
That's special.
That is special. I'm gonna start.
The CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast didn't get you on there?
No. Sadly, no. No. Nor will it. I'm just lucky it keeps me a job. All right. So, yeah, I'd love to hear about Pandora. If you've been able to get on Pandora, how long it took, and all that. So that's one thing you can call in with some feedback about. And also, don't forget, we'd like to hear your thoughts about, filling in with more of these roundtable shows where we just talk about what's going on in the indie music community, news, and what you guys are talking about. If we do more than flip-flop interview roundtable, if you guys are okay with that. You're not going to stage revolt and unsubscribe.
So you haven't asked our permission if we wanted to be involved in more roundtables.
Right. I'm a busy man. I got things to do.
Well, I can just fly solo then. I've been looking for a solo gig.
You could just do a monologue about the ending of Lost.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody did mention the Music Discovery podcast in a call that I wasn't able to play. And if you like indie music and discovering what's going on here as far as stuff coming into CD Baby, check that out. It's just search CD Baby in iTunes. You'll see all the different music podcasts, but musicdiscovery.cdbabypodcast.com is the address. And I co-host that with Peter, so unless you guys have anything else,
Matt, word, happy summer.
Well, we will catch you guys sometime in the future. We're determined to make it to 100, so there will be more.
I'm gonna play my squeaky chair real quick.
Bye-bye.